jump.
Two and two on two. That bomb's so far. Tink, they gotta move quick right now. They're going for it. The defuse is already happening. Hiko, are you kidding me? He's gonna go for it. They win the round. Hiko picks up a triple and Cloud9 win it one. My heart's beating, my hands are shaking.
He's thinking about it, here it comes.
Man, from
Gengar's pretty
bottom.
Close.
They're gonna dive in, it was the time. He's exhausted, Uzi. Oh, on the back, they're trying to get in. Zero's taking on the turret, he's gonna go down as well. Insane low, Insane goes down. Now Uzi is
oh my
God.
Yes!
There's a god!
Are you kidding me?
Let's keep it clean. It's family show.
Family show. Family show. Family show. Family show. Family show. Family show. Family show. Family show. Family show. Family show. Family show. Family show.
Welcome, one and all, to the Center Ring episode 5, coming to you live, pre-recorded from an undisclosed location. My name is Tim. The gentleman across the table from me is Brandon. Brandon, how are you today?
Yeah, pretty good. Doing well. Thanks for asking.
Good to hear. We are your professional gaming podcast. Whether this is the first time you've listened to us or you are a returning listener, thank you. We have a show for you today. Lots of happening, lots of going on in the esports world. We have MLG New Orleans that just happened recently. Lots of games going on there. We will dive into that first. Second on the menu, we have a very special interview with Justin Delario, who is with Razer Gaming. Everyone knows that company. Brandon had a chance to sit down with him. So that will be very interesting there. He's basically in charge of their...
He's senior global esports. Sponsorships, marketing, events, all that stuff.
Okay, so there you go. So we dived into a little bit with there. And also we have the segment that I just named, Pros Aren't Bros, where we discuss some recent topics going on in the pro community, where the pro players just aren't being bros, Brandon. So a little bit of... actually, we'll make... StarCraft 2 will make its debut on the podcast. So we'll discuss a little bit there. And also the ever-controversy hacking, let alone online, but also at LANs. And then, of course, we will finish the show with The Micro, your quick hits segment, rather, of stories where, you know, they just don't warrant a full discussion at the moment. So let's dive into this, Brandon. MLG New Orleans was, let's say, last weekend, right?
Yeah.
Just a few days ago.
Yeah, like yesterday.
And actually, I'm very excited about this because we actually get to bring up, I think, to dive in for the first time, Super Smash Bros. Wii U. I know we discussed it actually a little bit in the previous episode, but for the first time, I feel like we actually get a chance to actually talk about the players in it. Last episode, we talked about Melee, which, you know, for right reasons, Melee is kind of the cream of the crop when it comes to Smash. People are trying to break through with Wii U, and finally there's a reason to discuss it over Melee. So we have here Zero. If you're familiar with Zero, correct? I think everyone...
Yeah, we brought him up in the very short segment that we had on.
Yes. Smash Zero, Wii U. the 20-year-old Chilean with the goofy Gunner optics and his scarf that he wears all the time.
I still can't believe that Gunner optics stuff took off, but that's a...
Look. I get your mom made you the scarf before you left Chile, and that's why you wear it. But come on, bro.
You don't... How are you going to knock that guy?
I'm going to knock him just because I don't like his face.
There's one guy in the Nintendo community that does something that they all do. They all have that weird little quirk that makes them kind of endearing, and you're going to pick on him for the scarf?
Look, I'm going to pick on him, not just for the scarf, though. It's when you add the scarf with the Gunner optics and just his whole look. I don't know why. I don't know. It's just something. I watch him win, and it hurts. It hurts to watch that guy be on the front of every Smash U or Brawl or, you know, it hurts that he is like, when I tell my friends, like, man, you really need to watch esports. Check out, you know, yeah, okay, you don't get Counter-Strike, but everyone grew up playing Super Smash Brothers. You need to watch this. And then they tune into Zero, and they're like, this is what I'm talking about. This is why I don't watch.
It can't. Okay, I personally have not seen a picture of this. It can't be any worse than the Pikachu hats.
Look it up right now. It is way worse. Way worse. No. Zero did not win.
He didn't win.
No. Nairo won, and that is where the big story comes in. Nairo finally defeats Zero. This is his third time meeting up with Zero in a finals of a tournament. Breaking, get this, and even people who don't follow Smash, or maybe if you don't follow esports very much and you're listening to this, even you can appreciate this in any competitive scene. He broke Zero's 54 winning streak. Zero won 54 tournaments in a row. 54 out of his last 56, if I do believe so. And by your face, I can tell you're looking at a picture of said man Zero. And you agree with me.
I found it. All right. It's much worse than
give me the Pikachu beanie.
Any day.
And the little cat ears on people over that any day of the week.
All right. The scarf, ridiculous. Gunner optics, I've already said, ridiculous.
Ridiculous.
But he's obviously got some skill.
Look, I don't know how Gunner optics has found its way into esports for as long as they have to completely deluge people that this is...
No, there's science behind it, but I mean, it's not something that's going to improve your game.
Not for 100 or 200, however expensive they are nowadays, glasses. Ridiculous. Yeah, there's science behind, like, maybe it will relieve a little bit of eye stress. You know what will
also
help?
And that's like over the course of hours.
Yes,
but
you know what will also help relieve eye stress? Blinking. So anyway, back to MLG New Orleans. Zero ended up getting second place for the first time since November 2014, I believe, which is huge. He has controlled the Super Smash Brothers Wii U scene since the game released. No one has been able to touch him. The closest he came from losing in a tournament was actually at Big House 5, where we talked about last week, but we didn't bring this up. He lost, went to the loser's bracket at Big House 5, and came back to win Big House 5.
Right. I remember us talking about him winning, yeah.
Right. So that's the closest he's came since, you're really looking at a year now, because it's exactly a year. November 14 was when he started this streak. It lasted an entire year where he didn't lose a single event that he went to for Smash U. So he completely controlled the scene. Like I said, Nairo was there with him. I mean, he, as far as Smash U players go, which kind of take the back seat as far as the Smash scene goes, IMO. Maybe someone, if you're listening and you're part of the Smash scene and you want to argue that with me, feel free. Hit me up on Twitter at Pirate Mushroom. But just from what I can see, I mean, I don't know. I think Melee, anyone will say Melee takes the cake. So I feel like this 54 game winning streak is kind of not
count.
Well, it counts because it's still his respective sport, right? It's kind of like when people knocked, you know, women's college basketball and UConn on their streak. It's still an impressive. I think anyone who's a competitor can still appreciate a 54 game winning streak.
It's like
no.
There's like an asterisk next to it. It's like you have this huge winning streak, but it wasn't in the most competitive place that you could have.
And yes, that's the point, is when you think, oh wow, 54 game winning streak, that's pretty impressive. You must play, you know, Super Smash Bros. That's pretty legit. And then like they're like, oh, you don't play Melee? Because from anyone who's maybe a casual viewer, I mean, even look at Big House 5 streams. Their main stream was all Melee.
I don't even
all
remember
weekend long.
Seeing Wii.
Well, you had
on
to
there.
Go to their second stream that only had a couple thousand of viewers at a time, except for the finals. So it really wasn't, you know, even at Big House 5, it wasn't even like the main stage. people like watching Melee. They're used to those players. And, you know, maybe that's somewhere at fault with the pros and the community.
Or the game.
Look, you had Halo. Halo was very popular. Halo 2 came out, and it trumped old Halo, even though there were a lot of pros who still liked Halo. Then Halo 3 came out. Halo 2 slowly went away. MLG adopted Halo 3 as its next thing. Halo 4 or Reach? I forget the order. But either way, my point is, it seems like with every game, the new one always outshines the old one.
Yeah,
and
Smash
even organizers and everything will still adopt the new one.
Smash is in such a weird spot, though, because, I mean, it's like there's not a whole lot. There's, I mean, with Wii there is, but there's not a whole lot of online participation. And that's kind of where, like, Halo 2 took over, you know, Combat Evolved, especially with MLG, is that you could play online.
This is true. This is true.
And we've heard pros specifically talk about how the later versions or the newer versions of Smash just aren't as competitive. And once again, we talked about this when we talked about Big House. The people that play that game love playing that game. They don't like being pro gamers. They like playing Melee. They like going to the lands to play Melee. So I think they're just in kind of their own little ecosystem as far as their game's concerned, and they're not going to let it go.
Yeah, and you know, and look, I know Zero won a tournament once, and I'm forgetting the tournament off the top of my head, but he won a tournament once, and when he was doing the trophy presentation on stage, the crowd started chanting Melee as he was getting his trophy because they were so excited that they didn't have to watch Brawl anymore.
I wonder how I would like to hear how he felt about that.
He posted a thing on Reddit saying, like, this sucks. Like, as a community, this sucks and is, like, basically embarrassing, which, I mean, I don't disagree with him. Gunner Optics and Scarf and all, I don't disagree with him. That I feel like, as a community, look, Smash is already such a unique community. We don't need to divide it by, you know.
Yeah.
Melee fans don't need to completely disown Wii U because it's not Melee.
I want to see a crew battle of each game now. Like, instead of having just a different region, just have players that play each game go against one another.
Right. And you know, one thing too, like Melee, I feel like that's obviously that is what it is right now. But one thing where is different with Wii U is online capabilities, updates. MLG New Orleans is the first tournament to have Wii U Smash. Since they did a shield update, they kind of patched the way the shields work and everything in the game. And that's another thing that maybe Nintendo can maybe tweak the game more or less for patches and balancing to where for Melee, you constantly, I mean, look, there's realistically 5 characters people play with that stand a chance.
Oh, in Melee?
In Melee.
Yeah.
Right, and then yet you look on Smash U and people have a variety of guys they play with. So I feel like the shelf life for Smash U is going to be just as long as Melee. But until GameCube stop working, I don't see Melee going anywhere. Now, I do see Melee maybe dying off just because the pro scene eventually moving on.
They're going to have to.
Like, if Mewtwo King and Mango and Armada and all them, if for whatever reason they're like, we have to catch up with the times, which I don't see them doing it. But again, if they do, then that game's dead, right?
Here's what's going to happen. You're going to have these guys that are currently pro players that life just kind of takes over, you know, like, we talked about retirements being, you know, crazy early in professional gaming. Life's going to take over. They're going to stop playing the game as often, stop going to LANs. People are going to stop playing Melee. Granted, Smash Wii U might be dead by the time that happens. There might be a whole nother game by the time that happens, but that's the only way Smash Melee is going to die.
Right, but so we're agreeing that when the top pros in Melee move on, does the game,
yeah,
right?
The game's done, like, yeah.
And I completely agree with that. So there's that. Melee, though, was at New Orleans. Again, it wasn't as big of a deal, I feel, because, yes, it had some top pros, but it didn't have Mango, it didn't have Armada, it didn't have you know, the larger portion of the pro scenes where Wii U did have Zero, it did have Nairo, and Nairo ended up winning. So that storyline took ahead of it. But let's not forget Melee. You had Axe taking third. You know, grats on him. He took 17th in at Big House. So, hey,
that's
look.
That's a nice step up for him.
Again, 17th to third. Yes, you didn't have Mango. You didn't have Armada there. But hey, isn't part of being a pro taking advantage when you can, right?
That's the benefit of having no structure in tournaments that anyone can show up to.
You need to take advantage from those little loopholes in it. Mewtwo King was there, however. He did get second place. Mewtwo King, though, I think uses the most variety of characters. Even at New Orleans Smash, he used the most characters out of anyone. You had him. He used four different guys. I mean, he used his normal guys like Sheik, Marth, Fox, and Peach. But still, Mewtwo King is really the only one that I see actually. Like, Hungerbox, who won first place at New Orleans, won it all with Jigglypuff, just like he does in every other tournament. Mewtwo King, I feel like, does a lot more counterpicking with his playstyle, so it's a little bit more entertaining to watch. But either way, there's Melee. And we'll talk about this in a little bit here with MLG New Orleans, but I guess word on the street is the crowd wasn't very big. I even for like Melee, they were saying like 30 people max was there.
There were tweets and pictures all over the internet of specifically Team Secret when they beat Monkey Business in Dota 2 to advance, I think, to the semifinals. Tweeted out a nice little photo that said, "And the crowd goes wild with all of three people watching the game."
Is that where we're at though now with esports? Is that part of the struggle that it can't be though, because you have events like ESL who sell out stadiums.
No, and there was a gentleman that came onto Reddit and was like, "Hey, I was at the event." He had the VIP passes and got like a backstage tour, so he got to kind of talk to some people, and he said that New Orleans didn't come through with a lot of the stuff New Orleans said they were going to do as far as advertising goes for MLG.
So the city itself?
The city itself played a part in it. There was another big football game, the LSU game, same weekend.
So it's a big college crowd.
So they say, yeah, they feel like, that took out of a lot of it. And then the rest of it was just straight up technical difficulties. Like, I don't understand how MLG can be around for as long as they have and still have the same errors. They couldn't even stream in HD to a lot of people. Like, people were saying the highest stream they could get was 720p.
Well, that is MLG's issue in general with their streaming service. Like, even just on regular people's stream, I mean, 720 is typically the max anyone is allowed to stream on MLG. And this is going back, but real quick, actually, before we get into MLG's woes, which I know they have plenty of, which is insane considering this is their 100th event and they've been around since we were in high school, which, you know, was like 10 years ago. So they've been around the block a few times. Even with the lesser crowd there, it definitely did not stop the, you know, the play-by-play guys for Smash in any way let it affect them. Here is the play-by-play for when Nairo defeated Zero for the Smash U finals. Just take a listen, close your eyes, because no matter how we describe the scene, imagine this with about 30 people in the crowd.
Oh my goodness, the back air.
Yeah, super strong back air right there, but not enough to feel. Oh my God! What is he doing down there? What is he doing down there?
What is he doing? What is he doing? We don't need Shovel Knight in this game. Nairo dig it, graves him damn self. Let's
go. Oh my God. One more stock. Hey, you can hear the chant right now. They want one more stock. This is looking amazing for Nairo.
Absolutely.
Zero looks like he does not have the answers today. This.
Oh my God.
Oh!
Maybe That's your Excalibur. That is your Excalibur. Pull it out. That's you. Now pull it out, boy.
That's why I love what? Smash.
What the hell was all of that? It was awesome.
That was beautiful.
Because that was amazing. That is why Smash is the greatest, right? Like,
oh, I completely agree.
If that was Counter-Strike, I would hate it. But because it's Smash, I love it. It's double standards, but that's second, life.
That second, do you have the casters?
I don't have their names.
The second caster that came in was
they
just,
do a lot of Smash, and I should know their names off the top of my head, but I don't.
That second caster is just A+, sir. That was beautiful.
The hype in that building for those handful of people watching it. And it was also live streamed, so obviously. But again, they don't care that the crowds are small. All they see is the champion, the king of Smash, being dethroned and just goes ape-s everywhere.
That wasn't the only first that we had at the MLG Finals this year either. Dota 2 with Team Secret over EG, 3-1 in the finals, was Eternal Envy's first win since 2013, which coincidentally enough, was at the last MLG World Finals. So that was a 2-year drought for him. And Misery of Team Secret, that was his first LAN win ever.
Really?
Yeah. So, I mean, and Team Secret's no slouch. They've been around a while. They're really good. And like that's been a long time coming for them.
Okay. Interesting stuff. And Team Secret was the one who tweeted out the funny picture of no one being there.
Yep.
Again, those pictures, small moments in time. So I guess take it all with a grain of salt. But look, MLG has been through the rocker. They started. I remember the first one we went to was in Frisco when Frisco had nothing out there. It was at Embassy Suites, whatever year that was. What, 2005? Four, maybe?
I think it was five.
Okay.
2005 when we went.
All I know is that those were the good old days where we were sleeping on the floor underneath a coffee table, anything you could to get there. It was so magical. I felt like back in the day, and when I say back in the day, I mean like 10 years ago, maybe even 8, MLG was the standard for professional gaming. That could be biased because we competed at MLG and that was our main focus. It was also before the time of Twitch and streaming. And
well, around that time, all you had was you had the World Series of Video Games, CPL, and MLG. And MLG were the only people doing console at the time.
And also Halo. I mean, that's look, I remember they had Halo. They actually had Smash there.
They did so Smash and
MLG,
Halo.
I mean, they abandoned Smash for a while, but now they're back with it. That's good to see MLG kind of pick that back up and realize that maybe they should have had it this whole time. And then it went awry where Halo kind of lost popularity. Partially that was, you know, Bungie's and was it the 313 studio?
Whoever 343.
343 studios, yep. Picked them up.
Well, you saw MLG start taking on, like they started doing World of Warcraft arena tournaments.
I mean, they started taking on
any game that they could get.
Any game that I feel in the end probably threw money their way to host the game. But there was heavy console focus, and then it started throwing in a lot of games, and I feel like that kind of hurt the crowd because people didn't really know what it was from there. Now they're big.
Well, when we went back for Rainbow Six, they had World of Warcraft there, and they had it like sectioned off into a whole other part of the event center that you had to like go through another door to get to, and it just wasn't a cohesive experience.
It didn't blend well. Yeah, I agree. And now Call of Duty is their bread and butter, where just bringing up the top three there, Team Elevate won third, Denial Sports won second, and first place Optic Gaming took home the 100K there.
Fun story about Optic Gaming, talking about Call of Duty and MLG. Co-owner of Optic Gaming, you may know, Nade Shot, has just released some quotes to Kotaku talking about streaming Call of Duty, his agreement to stream Call of Duty on MLG.TV, his biggest professional regret. He feels personally responsible for killing Call of Duty competitive.
And I don't argue that, though, because A, first off, lots of first on today's show, because it's the first time we've ever brought up Call of Duty, except for Activision's League. Look, I'm not going to lie. I have never watched a full competitive Call of Duty match. I cannot sit down and watch a full one. A, I don't find it that entertaining. I find the spawn points in the game horrendous.
I've always thought Call of Duty was who sees who first, and
look,
that doesn't
and
sit
sure
well.
I'm sure once you take it to the next level, like any other FPS or any other game, it's completely different. That's just my two cents on it. I don't watch competitive Call of Duty. That being said, it's huge at MLG. I don't know if it's huge, though, as far as an esports community goes. I don't think it is. Then again, it's only really on MLG.
My understanding is that it is a big scene. It's only on MLG, and they don't use like the typical social network channel. Like most esports have, like Reddit is kind of like their go-to hub for information. Apparently, the Call of Duty community relies on Twitter. Like, I don't know how anyone follows it on Twitter because of how quickly it updates, but that's apparently what they use.
I can tell you what they don't follow it on, and that's MLG's website, because it's horrendous. They have the worst. Look, we used to live on MLG's website on their forums, and it was not that bad when we went. It is horrendous now. I went just to look and do research for this show on like the results and kind of storylines and everything to go off of. I had to like Google and go to all these off sites to find results and like actual statistics on the tournament, because MLG doesn't even have the results for MLG New Orleans, their world, quote unquote, world finals on their 100th event, this huge deal. And it's almost like because it did so poorly on foot traffic, they're trying just to let's move past it. Let's go to the next event. Let's move by.
I did the same thing. I went on there, just this afternoon to finish the research for today's show. And they did not even have the Smash bracket updated past the second round. Their latest news story posted at the time was from October 7th, when the groups for the Dota 2 championship were announced. They have no news on their website, nothing updated. It doesn't... Unless you're just going there to watch a video in the first one third part of a portion of the website, they call it above the fold.
Which is awful.
Unless you go there to watch a video, you're not getting anything you need out of that website. It drives me crazy.
It's almost like they tried making the approach of, hey, this online streaming stuff is really taking off. We need to focus more on that. And now that's what their homepage is. It's not Major League Gaming. It's a streaming service exclusive for certain people, and it's just really not looking good, and it hurts.
Maybe
I want MLG to come back.
Maybe Yahoo can fix them. You know, Yahoo's in talks to purchase them, so maybe Yahoo can fix them. Although,
look,
I don't have a whole lot of hope considering their current track record with fixing websites.
Yeah, something needs to happen, though, because I miss MLG being MLG. And whether or not that, you know, is focusing on console gaming, look, I get that. People don't have their opinion on console versus PC. Whatever. You know, competitive gaming is competitive gaming, right? Can't we all just get along? If Call of Duty has a scene, if enough people have it to support this tournament, then fine. Albeit, that's great. I fully support it. But let's have a site that at least gives it the respect that, you know, a top-rated esport deserves, and not this garbage that you can't even find the winners of your own world finals on.
Yo, MLG, pay me, take me to your events. I will update the news on your website for you.
It's ridiculous, man. You know what's not ridiculous, though? Razer Gaming. I love their products. And we actually had the chance, or not we, I should say. Some of us have to work for a living and can't do interviews in the middle of the afternoon. But you, sir, had a chance to sit down with someone from Razer.
I feel like that was a shot. Yeah, it was at 4:30 in the afternoon, actually. So it was after, you know, kind of general work times. But I sat down with Justin Delario, who is, like we said earlier, senior global esports. That's where his job title ends. I feel like it's missing a word, but that's his actual
like
job
coordinator.
Title.
Coordinator. I feel like there should be a coordinator or something on there.
Right. So he handles all of the marketing, event promotions, sponsorships, pretty much anything to do with esports that goes through Razer, you know, like dealing with the pro players and stuff like that.
So if I'm watching a tournament, for instance, Nairo, who plays for Liquid, who has Razor as a sponsorship, on his old Liquid fancy track jacket, there's a Razor patch there. Most likely that went through Justin.
Justin, or I think he said there's three other people that do his job with Razor. But we sat down for about 15, just about 20 minutes, and kind of talked about his involvement with esports. He's been around for a long time. Also got his start in MLG. Was a professional World of Warcraft arena player. He actually made his name kind of known in Smite. He created his own agent or his own organization, and it eventually turned into Mortality Gaming, which kind of won a few things and then kind of disappeared earlier this year. So we sat down and kind of just talked about his history and some new stuff coming out and his opinion and where things are going with esports with Razor. So let's go ahead and just jump into the interview real quick.
I kind of want to talk a little bit about some of the new stuff that Razor's got coming out. Just kind of get your opinion on it and its effects on the esports community. Pretty specifically, the OSVR, the virtual reality headset that's on the website. Do you think that's going to have any kind of application as far as esports goes?
Well, OSVR is a project that Razor is a major partner in, and you could call them one of the founders. However, as a Razor employee, I can't speak for OSVR's intention.
Oh, true. Okay.
However, as a esports contributor, whether that's as a consumer or just someone who's involved in the industry, my own personal forecast for the ways that OSVR can be involved eventually is actually not through having, five players sitting down playing a game competitively wearing virtual reality headsets, but I'm actually interested to see if something will adapt sooner as, a League of Legends World Championships is going on, and you could purchase the virtual ticket, and what that means is you're wearing your headset while the finals is going on, and you feel like you're sitting right there in whatever stadium it's going in on in.
So more of like a for the people spectating to be closer to the action, right?
Yeah. Or you're spectating and you're actually like on the ground inside the rift or something.
That would be insane. Every time I think about virtual reality, I always think about those movies like The Gamer or something, or the old Hackers movie back in the day where they wear virtual reality and were physically trying to like move around in the games and stuff. And it's a pretty exciting time to be involved in something like that. It's really cool that Razor's kind of helping push that envelope a little bit. So speaking of, you said you're with marketing and working with the players and everything. Do you guys kind of have players on deals for just Razor equipment? Is that a typical sponsor thing, or is the sponsorships more involved with just getting kind of the Razor brand out there in front of people?
Sponsorships in esports definitely take a lot of different forms. Razor being a endemic peripheral sponsor in the space, typically our sponsorships revolve around our equipment. We like to work with players who want to use our equipment while competing, and for us that's validation that we can use to serve marketing purposes, advertising at large. I can't really speak to the specifics of our contracts. However, I can say that, our sponsorships typically include whether it's all of the gear that somebody would need to compete that we create. And in some cases, they also involve logistics support, whether that's through monetization, commission on sales, travel support, things like that.
Very cool. So kind of off the cuff, when a player decides to switch his mouse or his keyboard, do you kind of take the martyr approach, like, oh, man, I should have done better? Or is it kind of like the scoring lover, like, you'll be back?
Well, I don't know. I guess it depends if they're – well, I mean, it's all a business, right? If somebody sponsors a Razor and they're using Razor peripherals, well, then they're doing their job. But
right.
Let's say they move on and get another sponsor. I can't really can't really get mad at anyone for doing their job.
Okay, good enough.
We have had a lot of cases though where people do move on, and you know they're working with a different company, but they're coming back to us, and they're like, "Oh man, you know how bad I feel. Like I would have just done better if I had still was using, you know, the mouse I used with you guys for 3 years. It sucks switching." We hear things like that all the time, and I'm sure it happens vice versa too.
Oh, that's got to be a little bit of reformation just hearing, you know, man, I probably could have won that major if I hadn't switched companies.
Yeah.
So as do you guys like, do you personally, or do you have any contact with people that field kind of the sponsorship requests, and like how many of those do you guys get on a routine basis? Just people emailing you like, please sponsor my esports team, or
we average around maybe a few hundred a week.
A few hundred people a week. Actually, that's a little bit lower than I thought it was going to be. Actually.
It's I mean the number is quite large. They're really hard to field. It takes me personally days, weeks, and months to get through some. Thankfully, being an esports professional, I know who's who in the different game genres. I know what events are going on, what teams are really like, you know, getting noticed. So I'm able to kind of first glance prioritize emails as they come in, or the request. So we get emails, and we also get submissions through an automated system. Combined, I'm not even sure what the number averages out to, but we get quite a bit to answer your question.
So you're actually handling those sponsorship requests directly?
Myself and the rest of Global Esports at Razer.
Okay, sweet. I didn't know if that would have filtered down or not to somebody else. Can you share like maybe one of the craziest ones you've ever gotten? Off the top of your head, anything outlandish?
No one specifically, you know, that wouldn't really be fair to anyone.
Right.
But I can tell you that quite often people misspell Razer. So within the first line, typically if I see Razer misspelled, I might move on quickly. Or we get a lot of people that, you know, they submit this long email about what they would like to do, what they would like to receive. But oftentimes when you read these messages or requests, I get a sense that people are asking us to sponsor potential. And the problem is that it's really hard to dedicate resources, whether that's equipment or money, to something that doesn't exist. I much prefer to sponsor things that exist and are tangible and have proven value. But you know, it's not that I'm calling those people out. It's a common mistake, or it's a common perception of the way things should be done. But that's why, you know, we go the lengths to provide things like our sponsor proposal guide on our website, so that people have an idea of what we're already looking for before they go and make the request to us.
That's great, and we'll include a link to the guide there in the show notes when the show runs. Have you guys had any discussion, or is there anything kind of running around about maybe getting an official Team Razer out, or are you guys doing okay just sponsoring the players that are already on teams?
Well, you know, our fighting game team, which is made up of some of the best individuals in their respective fighting games in the world, is Team Razer, and that's the flag that they wear when they're out competing around the world. But when it comes to some of the other esports and the team titles and something like a fully stood up Team Razer, while it's definitely been, you know, passed around as an idea, it's just logistically not in the cards right now. There's also a number of conflicts of interest that might be caused from something like that, and we'd really have to sit down and plan it out well.
Gotcha. What's your opinion of fighting games as far as a kind of struggling in popularity versus something like Counter-Strike or Dota or League of Legends? Do you think there's any one reason or something kind of holding them back from hitting that same critical mass that the other games are?
I don't think that their communities and the as far as players who are willing to go and compete in these games, in those games, are hurting as bad as just maybe the viewership is. And the viewership on things like a stream are what essentially give people most people like an idea of how healthy the community or esport is, which is kind of skewed. But I think that, you know, on one hand, people are just more entertained by some of the team dynamics and the team esports, and the games are played by more people. because more people are always going to play team games because a lot of the consumers out there gaming content, they don't like one-on-one games as well much because they don't like losing and then knowing that they're responsible for the loss. But then also, you know, prize pools play into how many people watch an event. Some people will argue that the FGC has a lot of work to do in terms of making their content more PC because of the way people act and interact on those streams. But I don't think that fighting games are unhealthy. And I don't think that reaching the critical mass, like you mentioned, is that far much farther off either. I just think that I already think some of the best people for the job are behind the scenes working on that right now.
Yes, we were actually talking about Big House 5, which is the big Smash tournament up in Michigan, on the last show, and we're talking about how different that stream is compared to every other game you'll see out there, like that stream. And we were actually commenting on how we hope it didn't change because the community that was there at Big House and in the fighting games were just... You could tell they all just loved the game and loved each other and were just having fun. And it was an interesting experience. It was much different than what you see everywhere else. So I kind of hope that sticks around and the fighting games take a bit bigger role in esports in general.
Yeah, I can agree more. The Big House 5 had a very good, was a very good piece of content. That community has thrived since early 2014. You know, people like Twitch.tv began to support the community quite a bit. And, you know, some of the primary leaders in that community are all very level-headed people who I think have sometime in the last 2 years also determined, you know, what they think they need to contribute to help make things, everything more successful overall. And some of their gains in terms of viewership, popularity, and community strength are due to those people kind of, you know, putting that time in. And I mean, look at VGBC and Gimmer and the excellent stream he puts on. If he wasn't driving around all over the country or flying around, you know, kind of setting the standard for what a stream for, you know, Smash, which used to be all kinds of ragtag events, then would we be as far as they are now? Or I don't think so. If Twitch didn't go and hire some major community leaders in Smash and then, you know, allow them to essentially travel around the country and help set standards of all these, this number of Smash events, then I don't think the community would be as well off as it is right now either. It's just, everything's a progress, process.
That's a great point. You mentioned a few minutes ago or a couple seconds ago about FGC needing to do some work just to kind of connect that back to some of the other games. Do you personally have kind of an opinion on some of the tournaments that have been like kind of missing out on payouts and kind of setting these sponsors up for a PR nightmare, essentially trying to recover from these tournament organizers not paying out to the players or anything?
Well, whenever I see, you know, some of this drama in the esports media or these events that aren't paying out or players that are mistreated at an event, I just kind of hope that, well, maybe this is one of the last times this will occur, because I think there's enough good people trying to do good work in the space right now that are going to eventually, you know, eat up the slots with regards to when esports events could be occur, and it'll just kind of phase out the rest of the things. But I do think that something like the player union that was proposed a week or two ago by a lot of the major Counter-Strike team owners is I think it's, while I don't necessarily agree with calling it a union because that's an actual legal term, I think that some evidence of people wanting collective bargaining in the space is good. It's a good sign, you know, whether it's going to be translated correctly in the short term or versus long term, I'm not certain, but it's a good sign that there's people willing to, you know, step up and make sure that standards are set or demand for standards in general.
Oh, no, I completely agree on the CBA stuff. I mean, that's kind of, we're definitely going to need to go down that road pretty quickly with how much money's being injected into the industry, especially after a couple teams have announced their huge investments in the last couple days.
Yeah.
So you've got experience on both sides of the rope, basically, between a, you know, business sponsorship kind of organizing side and being a player, even if it was, like you said, way back when or anything. Which side did you kind of prefer to be on? I mean, do you have a preference one way or the other?
I think that I miss being a team manager during the wins and getting to be a part of that. You know, you win an event, one of your players wins an event, and just that feeling. But in general, I like that in my current role, I can affect esports at large. And, you know, one of my personal goals is just to kind of improve this space as best as I can. I mean, in 2014, I was still working full-time for the government, and I finally kind of, you know, told myself, okay, I think I trust the esports ecosystem enough that I'm going to go and I'm going to find a job full-time in esports. And I was lucky enough to know people and have a good enough reputation to get this job that I have now. But it doesn't just stop at getting a job in esports for me. I want to get some competition between gamers. Every day at lunch, we all pretty much eat lunch together, and then we spend the rest of our lunch break gaming.
Oh, that's great.
Around 5-6 o'clock, and some people are jumping back into games. And then, you know, based on whatever people determine as their own personal schedule and what's needed to complete their work for the day, people are gaming all throughout the day.
That sounds like a great work environment. It sounds like fun.
Oh, it definitely is. You know what, like, gaming like we do, which, to, you know, just some people may sound like, wow, do you guys do any work? But to us, it's a core part of our jobs. I mean, if we weren't in touch with the culture, if we weren't in, you know, deeply invested in the games ourselves, then how would we know how to communicate with our consumer base, or how would we know what our consumer base cares about?
Oh, and that's a great point. I mean, that discussion in general with esports comes up a lot, that the distinction between gaming being a hobby or something for a career. So that's great that Razer's been able to provide that kind of environment for people that love to do it. So 5 years down the line, think you'll still be at Razer, still gaming every lunch break? And where do you think Razer's going to take esports? I mean,
I think for the foreseeable future, as long as esports is a thing, Razer's going to be involved. I mean, Razer's been involved since the very beginning. Razer was founded on the idea that there are gamers out there who just want to be more competitive than other gamers. So they're going to seek that tactical advantage, and that's when, you know, the Razer Boom Sling Mouse was created. But for those reasons, and that's why Razer will always be involved in esports, no matter what form it takes. Myself personally, I don't know if I'll, I don't know what I'll be doing at Razer, but I hope to be involved in esports, and I hope to be at Razer, and hopefully, you know, I've seen some kind of promotions. But I'll tell you one thing, I know for sure, I'll definitely be gaming.
All right, last question. If you had to pick one Razer accessory, one peripheral that you had that you could keep and get rid of all the rest, which one is it?
Oh, it's too hard. It's too hard. Because, you know, before I worked at Razer, I was already a Razer user. I had the keyboard, the mouse at home, mouse pad. But, man, there's just so many good ones. Like, my blade is amazing.
Oh, yeah, I noticed in the email signature sent from my Razer blade. Yeah.
Hey, I just want people to know. That's a tough question. I don't think I can answer it, unfortunately.
Yeah, fair enough, Justin. So, everyone, that was Justin Delario. You can find links to, I'll put a link to his Twitter as well as the sponsorship guide in the show notes. Justin, thank you for coming on the show. And we'll hopefully talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Okay. Sweet, man. Cool. Thanks. That was Justin Delario from Razer Sports. Thank you so much for that, Justin. We surely do appreciate it. Pretty interesting stuff he said there. One thing that I really took away from it, because it's not the first time I actually heard it. I don't know if I've heard it from Razer, because it seems eerily familiar to where I heard it before, but the virtual reality where they want to try and make it to where the spectators, like you buy a you know, a digital pass, virtual pass, whatever you want to call it, and then you can basically, I guess, control a camera to where you just personally kind of are sitting in the arena and watching the events.
which is totally 180 from what, I mean, when I was like pulling all the stuff up and all the information, I thought virtual reality, I think of like I said in the interview, like the movies where the players are inside of the game and playing the game. And yeah, that's a whole, you know, the whole different.
He took it
the other direction.
You wanted to go right and he turned left on you on there.
And that's why he works for Razer.
Right. And I've heard that before. I don't remember if it's going into actual like other sport leagues or where, but it sounds so familiar that I've heard someone mention that they're trying to make it more of a spectator tool than a professional athlete tool. So that was somewhat interesting there for that.
And I just want to bring up once again, we talked about it in the interview. It is in the show notes, the sponsorship stuff. Those yes. guys get a ton of sponsorship letters. If you do have a team and you are looking for a sponsor and you want to try and become a professional gamer, please take a look at Razer sponsorship guide that, and they will give you, they lay it out for you very nicely on how to do it.
And maybe
you just have to do it.
Take that tool and apply it to all your other sponsorships.
Yeah.
That's a little pro tip for you. Don't be like 16, 17 year old Tim and Brandon free writing your application for sponsorships.
Four line emails to whoever you can find.
Big companies. You look back and you're really embarrassed that you were like, why the hell would anyone have sponsored us?
Like now I would go back and read it and just tilt my head back and just laugh at me.
Like, this is ridiculous. Either way, thank you very much, Justin. Maybe we'll talk to him again in the future when Razer has maybe new products going on or anything like that. Always nice to deal with them. Awesome products there. Going into the next segment here, though, something that's not so awesome. Pros not being bros. A lot of things going down this week. One in particular, I guess this morning, that you can dive into a little bit more detail, but where, you know, professional gamers, professional organizations, coaches, everybody is getting to the thick of it because, of course, it wouldn't be esports if there weren't scandals and people trying to cheat the system. So
Have you ever seen the movie Swordfish? You know how it starts off with the ending and then it goes back to the beginning.
Is that Halle Berry's boobs?
Yes.
That's all I take away from it. I have no idea what the movie's about.
Anyway, Immortal Jared, aka Lycan, aka Jared Williams, tweeted out earlier today, how to lose credibility and anger a community. Ask yourself, what could that be about? Oh, it's unsubstantiated rumors of pros cheating at Counter-Strike's Global Offensive LANs.
Awesome, awesome. Not completely, not completely uncalled for since it has happened before.
No, so the tweet that blew up said, CSGO has bigger issues. Some pros are blatantly cheating at issues. Hacking is prevalent in top-tier players. He didn't give a source. He didn't say what prevalent meant or how top of a tier.
Right. Are we talking top 10 or are we talking top 50? Like, that right. can make a big difference.
So, Thorin actually released a video a while back on a topic called witch hunting, which basically is, you know, if you call somebody a cheater and then all of a sudden the whole community turns on him, even if he's not cheating. Long of the short, Jared actually went on TwitLonger, which I don't understand who thought this website was a good idea. It's a lot more reading than regular Twitter.
Dude, it's a ridiculous... Look, Twitter was not meant to tweet long.
Yeah. So, besides 140 that. Turned into 1,000. Anyway, in this, he says, I'm sorry for the way I presented it. It's true, and I'm not going to tell you my sources, but I have them.
That's such a cop out. That's so cheap. That's so cheap to say that, don't you worry about it. I got my sources. Hey, I know I made this bold claim. Don't worry about it. I got this.
He went on to explain in like Reddit threads and stuff like that. Like when he says prevalent, he means like one or two, which is not what anybody would mean if they said prevalent.
No, I'm thinking at least 40%.
Yeah, like
prevalent means it's pretty widespread. He talked about how not every LAN checks equipment for cheating mechanisms. I'm not up on
like,
cheats.
Like
I'm not sure. Like, well, apparently, like you can
turbo
store
switches. Or...
Well, you can store like stuff in the mouse, so that like when you plug them in the mouse, it you know runs the cheat or whatever it is. He got called out by other casters and analysts and stuff, for saying it like he did, presenting it like he did. Ended up deleting the tweet, put out the how to lose credibility and anger community, and then probably about 4 hours ago. Said he's going to take a break from the internet, which is probably a good idea.
A break from the internet. So vague, yet so informative. So, yeah, I mean, that's a very bold claim, especially when he comes out and says, you know, it's really only two guys. And again, he doesn't really go into detail on what level of pro. I know it's happened. I don't see, though, how the big pros who are like all their matches are constantly getting streamed. You know, like, I don't see how, like, if someone on Virtus Pro
could do this when people
are constantly watching their games.
Well, the big of it is that the pros' computers aren't really being streamed. It's the spectators on the server are being streamed so they can switch cameras. The casters can switch cameras and junk like that. So you wouldn't actually be seeing the stuff that the pros are seeing on their local machine. I mean, it's feasible, and I've heard that it does happen. It's not as prevalent as this guy likes to say.
I mean, you have judges. Like, people don't realize this, but a lot of tournaments, MLG being one of them, and I've seen on ESL, they have, like, judges standing behind players. So, like, none of that happens. I just don't see it being for any team that goes to, like, ESL or SIVO. Or, you know, any of these big tournaments.
There have been pros banned from ESEA and ESL right. for cheating.
And a lot of it I know is through online. Like, they found out.
The qualifiers and
somehow,
and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's very embarrassing. And you're almost thinking, like, why would anyone do that? And it's so ridiculous. But at the same time, think of it like with baseball, people do steroids. It's essentially the same concept. Yeah, a little different, but I mean, you're doing something for your advantage where the other players aren't. So it's the same concept, right? It's something that's illegal in that respective field. And in
news of something much larger than Counter-Strike professionals cheating at tournaments, StarCraft II had a huge story break.
This is and it broke very fast. So StarCraft II, the team... Prime, professional Counter-Strike, or professional StarCraft 2, there we go. Prime just got busted the other day for match fixing, which, again, not the first time it's happened. It won't be the last. It could be going on right now as we speak, but they got busted. It was their turn to get caught.
The Koreans do not joke around with that.
The Koreans dropped the hammer on them. So looking at this here, basically, to start out the... What's it called? Basically the Korean Esports Federation, if you will, found this out. They've been doing investigations now for a few months where word kind of came down the line that, you know, hey, there might be some, you know, people are throwing matches and there's very weird. And this is kind of how iBuyPower got caught in Counter-Strike. There are very weird bets going on that at weird times that you would never see, and teams are losing in really weird ways where it's like it almost looks like they're winning and then they do something really unlike a professional would do. So it's kind of what started this investigation. And when I say investigation, I mean like law enforcement got involved. Like I said, the Korean Esports Association got involved. It's big enough in Korea to where they actually have one of those. Looking at the direct players that it started out as, the coach Gerard, that's such a low blow that your coach is the one who is helping you fix a match. I can't imagine that the organization's very happy about that. And from, let's get this out of the way. Everything that I've read, the organization Prime is at no fault. They don't have a team anymore just because everybody.
It sounds like to me that what I've read is that the people that convinced him to or convince them to fix matches kind of weaseled their way in as either
they had mutual contacts or they kind of put money into the organization as a sponsor to get close to the players.
Yeah.
There was a ton of money on the line, though. Like, from what I understand, it was somewhere in the neighborhood between $28,000 and like $35,000 that kind of exchanged hands for these matches to be fixed. That's and that's United States. That's a USD. That's a lot of money.
Right. There's a lot of money. And once Kespa found out about this, they did not I mean, this is literally all happening within like 24, 48 hours where Kespa, the Korean Esports Association, dropped the lifetime ban hammer on these players. Lifetime ban, never to play again. They said, regardless of what the legal investigation finds, they are done.
I also thought it was pretty interesting that Yoda, one of the players from Prime that was charged and arrested for it, claims that he was blackmailed into fixing some of the matches after.
Yeah, so this is kind of where that goes. So, and we'll get I'll get there in just a second with the blackmailing thing with Yoda, because to try to get to there, you have to kind of set the stage up first. So in total, about 12 people have been kind of, you know, associated with this kind of match fixing ring. They're pretty sure they've got everyone that were involved on there. 9 of the 12 are arrested. They're good to go. One guy is currently, when I last looked before we did the show, is at large, quote unquote. One of the suspects is at large, remains at large. I don't know what that means.
I'm impressed that
I'm imagining
at large is somebody running from the police,
but I just imagine like.
We have our first pro gamer
at large.
At large.
Like, I just imagine this guy actually just sitting at home with headphones on, just not hearing them knock at his door.
He's like,
he's just sitting there playing games. Yeah,
he's playing a game of StarCraft right now.
And until he orders pizza, he has no reason to remove those headphones. I've been there, bro. It's okay. So there's that. So going down the line here, kind of with this story here, you know, They're confident they found everyone at large. You mentioned that, you know, they're ranging anywhere from the players and the coaches getting paid $5,000 to $20,000 just to fix one match. Now, and you're thinking, okay, well, what benefit, you know, $20,000 in the grand scheme of things, it doesn't seem that big. That's what they were paying the players. This doesn't go, I haven't read anything that goes into details where the amount of betting that took place. The betting scene is so outrageous that the official StarCraft II organizations were not showing the in-game clock on tournament screens. So, you know, like in Counter-Strike, you have the in-game clock up top telling you how much is left on the game, or just like in any other sport, there's a clock. They were removing that so spectators wouldn't know exactly how far in the match it is. So people couldn't bet, you
depending
know, maybe
on how much
yeah,
is left.
Like maybe throwing off the betting game. That's how serious they were getting. It's gotten to the point now to where even Kespa and all these organizations are threatening to take the players to court. I don't know what they're going to accomplish there, considering I believe Yoda is like 22 years old and Gerard is like 27. So I don't know if you're like the official association for esports of Korea, like what advantage you have taking them to court. Like, what are you going to get out of that?
It says right here that gambling is strictly regulated in Korea, and Gerard is also being charged with spending over 57 million the Korean currency on illegal internet gambling.
Yeah, so again, like I understand that part, but as far as suing them for, you know, basically fraud and all of that, I don't see any advantage of the organization wasting their time or money suing these guys. They're already caught. They're already going to jail. I feel like you just need to let this one go and fix the problem at hand, which is match fixing, which StarCraft II has had issues before back in 2010 with this. This is not the first case. And as you said, these guys kind of approached, you know, Gerard originally kind of posing as sponsors, kind of, hey, here's some money. And then, oh, by the way, man, we just gave you all this money. Wouldn't it be cool if you convinced your players to, you know, lose this game and have some money come our way and we'll give you a cut? That formed into him talking to the players of Prime and getting some of them on board. Yoda being one of them. Yoda got paid to fix one match. After that one match, again, Yoda, I believe he's 22. You can fact check me on that. Don't care if I'm wrong. He's in his 20s. He's 22. And then after he got paid to do the one match, they started blackmailing him, saying, no, you're going to fix a lot more matches, or we're going to tell people exactly what you did, and you're basically screwed either way.
I feel like there's a sports hype movie somewhere, a plot somewhere in that turn of events.
It is very Hollywood. And so maybe I'm wrong here, and maybe the listeners can tell me, or maybe you can argue this with me. I feel like if it comes to the point of being blackmail, you should probably just, like, turn yourself in, right? Like, you would probably get in less trouble if he brought it to the authorities the first time around and was like, look, I fixed this one match. One match is all I've done. Slap my hand. Give me, like, a year ban. I promise it won't happen again. I'm young. I'm stupid. My coach told me to do it. It's a lot of money. I'm sorry. These are the guys doing it.
This is from my Law and Order background and CSI. I would go into one of those places and just say, hey, I've got some really good information.
I need a pardon.
I'm going to need like some kind of assurance that, but then again, it's not exactly, you know, the New York courtroom that you're arguing in. It's Korea. So.
Yeah, and I have no idea how that works over there. I'm not even going to pretend like I do, but still, I just feel like when it comes down to where, okay, I'm either going to get screwed out this entire time while fixing matches. And keep in mind, I think a lot of people actually knew about this because you had people like Keane on the team leave the team just like a day or two before all of this news broke out. Like all these guys on the team basically left to where, to the point of this news breaking, the only two people that were still even in cahoots with the team was Yoda and B-Boom and Gerard. The three people who got in trouble for fixing matches. Everybody else on the team left. So obviously they had to have known, right? Like,
I think it's really awesome that,
games together, I know when you're throwing a match.
I think it's pretty awesome that they used first or last initials when they were describing the people who were betting on these games and all the press releases, like Mr. H and Mr. I.
Ridiculous.
That's really entertaining. A lot of money. I'm kind of worried that's kind of where the American betting scene is going to eventually go. I mean, we've already had examples of iBuyPower throwing matches to make money off of esports betting. I'm kind of worried that it's going to keep going that way until it gets regulated.
Well, and I was going to say, I think it's going to keep going that way until people start realizing, like, I can get in a lot of trouble. This is not just a video game when you're talking about fixing betting and getting money out of it.
No, like,
it's not just about
iBuyPower got a lifetime ban.
Right, like you can get $1,000 for winning this tournament. You can get a lot more time in jail.
Right. So like iBuyPower got banned for life from ESEA and ESEL. These guys are going to jail. And that's what's going to happen here if it keeps going that direction.
Well, because you get enough money involved and enough people will watch. So there is the first official pros not being bros. On to the micro.
Production value.
I'll go first. The big news broke down that Virtus Pro had some money coming their way. USM Holdings Investment Company decided to invest $100 million in Virtus Pro, the organization, not just a particular team like Counter-Strike or League. $100 million is going to the name that is Virtus Pro from USM Holdings. If you're unaware of what a holding company is, it's probably what you think. It's a company with a lot of rich dudes who just invest their money into things. So that's $100 million going to VP. Supposedly clean money. Well,
probably so.
Time will tell, but they're going to use that to, I guess.
They said it's not all coming up at once. It's like a up to depending on different situations. But like,
oh, okay.
that $100 million, if it were to be invested for the full amount, I had a big discussion on Reddit about this. That $100 million is worth more, or like 98% of the entire ESEL, ESEA company who hosts every major Counter-Strike tournament there is. Now, granted, that's in the whole team, but I mean, like, they are literally saying that this one team, VP, is bigger than every prize pool that's out there.
The entire league. Well, maybe that's a good thing. Maybe that's going to be the start of getting players on contract. Though they say that that's kind of what it's going to start going to. And then also one footnote, and again, these are all footnotes, Esports Arena. I guess this is going to be in Russia, but an actual building that is designed.
Well, they've got one in California right now.
Esports watching.
They did the Hearthstone Championship a couple weeks back.
At an actual esports arena?
Well, they called it. It's called. It's called Esports Arena. It's a LAN center.
Okay.
But MLG has a place in Columbus.
But I can only imagine for $100 million, they're going to actually build what in my head is an actual stadium with just like a hexagon of TVs in the middle.
Yeah, probably. I mean, that's pretty much what MLG built in Columbus, and they said it's pulling in money, but when you're in Columbus, there's not a whole lot of competition.
Correct.
Outside of LeBron.
Correct. What's your contribution to the micro?
There's actually Daily Dot reported on a new coaching platform for League of Legends and Counter-Strike where you sign up, pay them, and you will have a coach review, play with you, and give you tips on how to become a better gamer.
Oh, yeah, I bet. I bet. How about this?
It's called Mastery, by the way.
Shoot them in the head. How about some pro tip? Free of charge. How about you just take the time, lower your sensitivity a bit.
Kill them before they kill you.
That's ridiculous and a waste of money, if you ask me. Just, you know, waste of money. YouTube things to get better, and that's completely free.
And there's a ton of people out there that release YouTube videos on how to get better at these games. If you just go look for it.
Professional gamers. Go follow Zero, and you can see his ridiculous scarf and gunner optics. And while you're just baffled that this guy is probably getting chicks, you can watch his really good Super Smash Brothers tutorials.
I'm putting the picture I found on the show.
Do it. And you know what's funny is I bet you we'd be best friends.
But he's probably a great guy.
I would not allow him to wear that scarf in my apartment. The scarf would stay at the door. Looking here, coming up shortly, there is a plethora of tournaments coming down the line for Counter-Strike. We'll go from soonest to latest, I guess, right? Cluj is coming up October 28th. They announced the groups today. Group C, or as I like to call them, the Group of Death, Virtus Pro, Ninjas in Pajamas, Titan, and Team Liquid. Who did Team Liquid piss off to get that group?
Hiko's reaction to it.
If you haven't seen Hiko's live stream reaction to finding out who he was playing against, it is well worth the 30 seconds of your life to do so, because he looked like he wanted to throw up.
It was beautiful. It was so funny. I told you before we started the show that it's really interesting that he found out through Twitch chat. Somebody told him that the groups were out. But yeah, he tried his hardest to act cool.
He looked miserable trying to read that thing. I wish I was a fly in the wall when like they had their first team meeting to discuss it and were like, well,
like, should we even go?
Cluj is a nice city.
Right.
Like, we'll get to see a lot of the city because there's not a chance in hell they're going to make it out of that group.
I'm still rooting for them, though. I've got my Team Liquid shirt.
A chance in hell.
I'm still rooting for them.
They make it out of that group. They might not even get a win in that group. So there's Cluj. Obviously, you have three other groups there. Go check it out. You have coming up next is the iBuy Power Cup. That's going to be on November 14th is when that gets started. Really, to me, the biggest story with the iBuy Power Cup is that the best non-invited team in IEM San Jose gets the last spot in San Jose. Does that make sense?
How many?
So iBuy Power, the teams that are not, or the teams that are in iBuy Power tournament that has a chance to go to San Jose would fall under CLG, Complexity, Conquest, Team Liquid, Renegades, and Winter Fox. That's not all the teams. That's just the teams that are not part of San Jose who stand a chance. If they win, if any of those teams, you know, are the top finishing team in that group, they're going to take the last spot in San Jose. Despite all their crying and whining about it, Liquid does have a chance to go to San Jose.
I was going
to
bring it up. They have a really good chance to get out of that group, at least, to get an invite to IEM, which would be nice, having another North American team in the North American tournament.
I mean,
if they deserve it.
I think Liquid might be the favorite there to get out of the non-invite. But then again, CLG's pretty good. I don't think they're better than Liquid. Renegades, if they ever want to play to the level that I think they can play at, they'll be fine. But they just, I don't know. Renegades, they're a tough team to root for. They're a crowd favorite, but man.
Well, the perpetual underdog, but they came over and they're setting up shop here in North America to do the TBS stuff.
And that's part of the reason they moved to America is to partake in more tournaments like this, just because in Australia, the only tournaments you get there invite Virtus Pro, and you're not going to get anywhere in that. So they were like, F it, we're moving to North America. Then again, formally mentioned here, IEM San Jose starts November 21st. The teams there, TSM, Team Envious, Lumosity Gaming, Cloud9, Virtus Pro, Navi, NIP, and of course, the eighth team, like I said, will be the top finishing team of the non-invites at iBuyPower. So figure that math equation out there. So that's all, we have a very exciting month of Counter-Strike. I mean, even on American soil, you have TSM, Envious, VP, big teams are coming to North America. And for the love of God, it will be normal times for us.
Yeah, watching games at 2 a.m. to see the first round of groups is rough.
Yes, waking up at 2 a.m., 4 a.m. is rough. And now this at least is going to be California time, so it might even buy us a few hours.
Yeah, you can get off work.
It will be great. Cannot wait. Is that all you have for the micro?
Yeah, we're good to go.
Excellent. Well, that would be episode 5 of the Center Ring in the books. Thank you for listening so much. If this was your first time, welcome. I hope you enjoyed it. If it's not your first time, thank you again for coming back. Let us know what you think of the show on our Twitter at The Center Ring. Follow us there to get the most recent updates on shows or anything like that. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Pirate Mushroom. You are
at Brand PGN.
Speaking of PGN, that is our website. You can actually just go to PGN, Professional Gaming Network. PGN.tv. You can get a lot of articles there. You can also find the Center Rings page there. Also, you can go directly to that at PGN.tv/TCR. Anything else you got?
That's it.
That's it. All right. Good deal. Episode 5 is in the books. Thanks again for listening. Tell your friends. Follow us on iTunes or any other outlet. Check us out on the website, and we will be back for episode 6 when we're back.